Hi everyone. Sorry for this mess. Just my laptop basically doesn't work with the VGA. But like, it is not going to be very long. My name is Lisa. Like, don't trust the slide. I'm from St. Petersburg Academic University, which is basically in Russia. And I'm talking today about mount injection API in LeakC, which is my bachelor thesis, kindly supervised by Christian Brammer.
I think you have to press escape because it's like now and hit.
You just have to press this.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So, what are we trying to solve? First of all, like a brief explanation. Is everyone familiar with LeakC and LeakD? Okay, so I just do a brief reminder that LeakC is a shared library. It's a user interface for, it stands for Linux containers. And it is a user space interface for Linux kernel virtualization primitives. And LeakD is a Linux daemon. It's Linux daemon, which is basically a more high-level thing, which provides you with for running containers, which provides you with more high-level functionality, like for example running on a remote computer or something. But under the hood, it uses LeakD. And let's imagine that you have a running LeakD container, and let's also imagine that it is running a mission critical workload, and you really don't want to restart this container, but you urgently need to mount something into that. So basically making some source something on the host visible on some path, under some path in the container without stopping that. This is what we call mount injection. And the problem is that now such functionality does not exist in LeakC. We are programmers. Why cannot we just go away with some insane workaround and be fine with that? Let's take a look at what we can actually do. So, how do we get the term?
Right. So, this time I broke it. And one second, put it up on 2, and there we go. Do you want the next slide?
I want the terminal.
Ah, you
want
the terminal. Yes.
Amazing. So let's take a look at what we can do if we have a running LeakC container. So first, we have to create that.
I can also type if you want, because this is a German keyboard. LeakC create, go on.
LeakC create, yes. Thanks. And the name X1.
Yes. So these are the low level tools we're using right now.
Basically, we are just creating by hand the LeakC container.
My level of competence is lacking.
Now we have to start the container. So do LeakC start. Oh, fine.
Yeah, it should go through. One, it's just downloading the root of S and it will attack.
Okay. A little bit about how the containers are actually done under the hood. Under the hood, the container is a file system subtree of your host system. It's just well isolated. One level of isolation which is used is mount namespaces. Like, how many of you are familiar with namespaces? Okay, so a brief reminder as well that namespaces is an isolation mechanism in Linux for isolating different important resources. And what is particularly interesting for us now is mount namespace, which isolates file system subtrees. So for example, if you are in an initial mount namespace, And you have your file system tree with all the those mount points, and you create a new mount namespace. So in that mount namespace, it will have exact copy of that your file system tree with all those mounts and everything, but it is completely independent. So what happens in one namespace is not visible in another namespace, and vice versa. And so again, back to containers. So since it is a subtree, we have a path to that subtree, and inside the container, we say we want to mount. Back to the example. Say we want to mount our host opt directory onto the containers MNT directory. What we can do, we can do it from host mount namespace. Just we should use, instead of MNT path, which we would use in the container, we should use the path to the container's rootfs concatenated with that path. So it would be something like sudo mount, let's say we want to bind mount. Where is slash?
Slash is here, it's
okay.
A little bit annoying.
Slash opt, and now we do containers rootfs, which is, in case of libc, we know that it is under var lib libc the name of the container,
yes,
and the path we want to use.
Rootfs?
I mean, oh, rootfs, right. Rootfs and mc?
Yes.
Yeah, something like that. And it actually works, so we can now take a look and check that the mount actually appeared inside the container. So it is on the in our namespace, but what happens in the container? In the container, we can do libc attach to run a command inside in the container we name x1. We say we want to find mnc and okay. Just take a look what is there, and is it there?
Well, it's probably
just do grep
dash and then find mount grep mmt.
Yeah, so basically it's here and it's all fine. So what's the problem with such approach? There are two problems. First of all, we have that mount point entry in the mount namespace of the host, and we cannot remove that. And this is actually a bad thing because it makes the performance worse, because when you want to create a new mount namespace, the all the mount points are copied, and it's just costly. But also, yeah, let's remove this container. Sudo libc destroy.
Yeah.
Why? Destroy.
Why? And then it's x1.
Yes.
You need to pass force because it's running.
You see that destroy actually failed. It is exactly because we have a hanging mount on the host. But if we didn't have that, it would be fine. But we can't remove this. Also, another problem is that it works for now, but it could actually fail. Let's create another like container. Sudo libc create.
It's
too.
Yeah,
can we actually do like the same thing?
Yeah. So let's make the lazy bastards that we are.
Cool. Nice. And
yeah.
You also need to fix the config file.
To what?
Of armor.
Right. So what I'm doing right now is basically we use app armor profiles to to secure the container even more. And the app ammo profile, for example, doesn't allow you to remount the rootfs, so that you can't mess with the host system. Great.
Awesome. Like, in the meantime, the purpose of doing all that is that if we, for example, for some security reasons, want to make all the events in the container invisible on the host, and like we want that host doesn't affect the container in any way, what we can do, we can remount rootfs of the container as private. So basically, how many of you are know about mount propagation and stuff? Okay, so basically I told you already about mount namespaces, and you remember that I told you that you are completely isolated, so what happens in one namespace is not visible in another namespace. The thing is that this, in some cases, this is too restrictive. And you sometimes want some events be visible in a number of namespaces or in a particular group of mount points. And for that purpose, the mechanism of mount propagation was introduced. So now mount point is not a mount point, but they come in different flavors. So you can have your usual mount point, which is a private type of mounting. It's basically what happens in with that mount point in one namespace is not visible in another namespace. This is like the usual situation, which is by default. But if you, for example, wanted to be, there is another type, which is a shared mount point. What happens with shared mount points is propagated to several specified other mount points, and what happens with those mount points is propagated like to this mount point. Basically, if you mount something onto that, the event of mounting is repeated on all those mount points. And the last type is something in the middle of private and shared. It is slave. Obviously, if the mount point is slave, then it has a master. And what happens on the master is propagated to slave. But what happens on the slave is not propagated back to the master. And that is the default propagation type which Lixie set up for the container's rootfs. And that's why all we've done right now succeeded. So in the container's, okay, it's already gone. But anyway, so in the host mount namespace, we bind-mounted opt onto some path, and under that same path inside the container, you saw the mount. But if we do like that, and now we say that we want our container's rootfs mounted as private, so let's see, let's do Lixie attach to X3.
Yeah.
And say that we want to mount private.
R private.
If I do R private, it will fail.
Oh,
well.
Okay, R private, yeah.
Oh, it basically doesn't matter. On the root. Yeah, and wait. That's it. We can now try to do the same thing. Basically, bind mount. Say opt onto the bar, we see rootfs.
X3.
And
if we send him to container. It's the other way around.
Mm-hmm. X3 rootfs.
Yes.
And MNC, something like that.
Do you forget mount?
Yeah, it seems like that. So you see it worked. Now let's check that it's actually there. Like C attach to X3, and now we want to check that it knows. No, let's just do like C attach. And we do find MNC. How do you do this?
Oh yeah, the slash, sorry. Grab MNT.
It's not there. It is because the root is mounted private. So basically, this is the main reason we don't want to do it manually. That it may fail. It relies on the setup of your container. It doesn't work all the time.
Slides?
And the next one. Awesome.
Yeah.
The same functionality of mount injection is already implemented in LXD. Here is like your what you can put on your terminal and be fine. You can add the device, you can remove the device, that's fine. But there are two problems. First of all, like not everyone can run LXD, simply. Second, like this written in Go, and Go has a multi-threaded runtime, and with Go's multi-threaded runtime, good luck joining user namespaces and mount namespaces, because it is the kernel requirement that you do this from the single-threaded environment. But of course, we are programmers, we have insane workarounds. Here we have insane workarounds as well. We can embed C code into the Go code, and the C code we use a function attribute constructor, which is guaranteed to run before our main function, so basically before you start the Go runtime. So that is how you are sure that you are in a single-threaded environment, and from there you can join your user namespace. Awesome. Very hacky, very insane. We don't want that fun. Yeah. And also, like, LXD is just a bit too, you know, too high level, since we are using, like, Linux kernel APIs. We want to be closer to the kernel. This is also LXD. So, what do we do? How we do that? We implement that in LXD. First of all, a bit of a reminder, like what we want to get. We have a source, we have a host, we have a container. We want to make some resource visible under some path in the container. We need to think about that in advance. And on the container startup, we are preparing a helper mechanism for future mounts. And that helper mechanism is a pair of shared mount points. So we create a shared mount point on the host, and we bind mount it inside the onto the path inside the container. So it's also shared. And so what happens here will be visible here. What we actually do when the mount is called. Under the shared mount point, we create a temporary directory, which is also created inside the container because we have a bind mount. Now, we mount the source onto the temporary directory, which is that mount event is propagated inside the into the container because of the mount propagation. Now we can create the target directory if it doesn't exist. And we do mount move from the temporary location inside the container onto the target location. Here, you might ask, like, how can we do that if the mount point is shared? Because you cannot do mount move from under the shared mount point. But the thing is that during the container startup, LXC is automatically remounting all the shared mount points as slaves. So basically, this mount point is still shared, but that one is slave. And what happens here is not visible on the host. But what we do here is visible inside the container. This is like awesome. And we just need to clean up, remove the temporary directories, and unmount the mounts on the host. So the host's mount namespace is not polluted anymore. And that's basically it. Now we have a neat, nice mechanism which does not rely on the container's configuration and stuff, and it works, and it's in LXC. So that's all I wanted to tell you about today. If you have any questions, like, feel free to ask. Otherwise,
yeah. One question about the make private. Why do you can run it inside a container? Why the container has the right to change the mount of its root file system?
I think because it belongs to its.
Its namespace.
Mm-hmm.
I can go into more detail if you want.
Yeah.
So basically, for a privileged container, you can prevent this is exactly from happening. This is what usually done most sane runtimes would do. Is you would have an AppArmor profile, and that AppArmor profile would prevent you from remounting your own root file system. But the way this works is essentially, it's the mount point, as Lisa said, belongs to the container. And what happens is we use Qt, but the advanced version of Qt, which is called pivot root.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the container, you create a new mount namespace and a user namespace in this scenario. And then inside of that new mount namespace, you mount your own rootfs,
okay.
At which point it belongs to the container. Then you do the pivot root, so you change the whole view of the file system, and then your mount point and all the mounts belong to you.
Okay. So you can also mount it read-only.
You can also mount it read-only if you want to. We can also run completely read-only containers. That works as well. Yes. Well, wait. It works for application containers, obviously. Systemd will freak out. Like, systemd will just freeze and kill itself.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.